today on The Bill Kelly Show on 900 CHML.
October 7th, 2019, a date that we will not forget ever. That was the day that Devin Selvey was murdered just outside his high school, Sir Winston Churchill Secondary School in the east end of Hamilton, to the shock of just about everybody in the community. It had a rippling effect right across the community. And you may recall October being football season. Of course, the football team, the Bulldogs, the Churchill team was going to play. They were going to cancel that. There was actually a rally where a number of Hamilton Tiger Cats showed up to offer their support and solidarity, and it was quite a moving experience. Kevin Ellis was a family friend of the family that was impacted by this, and you know, we talked with him. He lived in the neighborhood, of course, and he organized a vigil a couple of days after that. Well, some months after that, I had a conversation with Kevin Ellis again, and asked him if he was satisfied with the work that the Hamilton Board of Education was doing to make the school environment healthier and safer. This is what he had to say.
You know, since they started these talks in the schools, and people have been coming forward and telling their stories, and pretty much in every one of the schools that we've gone to, there are school board trustees in the meetings. Sometimes some of the teachers will sneak in, you know, even though they're asked not to come in. They'll just come in just to hear the stories of what the people are saying. And I think it's opened a lot of eyes as to just, you know, how bad it really is inside the schools, not just in Hamilton, but pretty much everywhere where children gather. And I think that we are seeing a positive impact, and we have to keep moving forward. And, you know, when we said that Devin's going to be the line in the sand, I think we're moving towards that. We're a long ways away, but we've come so far from where we were.
It's Kevin Ellis, a family friend. In response to that, the Hamilton Board of Education actually set up a review panel, a bullying prevention and intervention review panel, with three well-respected community members, Dr. Jean Clinton, also Brenda Flaherty, and Dr. Gary Warner, to help the board address this. Well, their report is being presented today. The Safe Schools Bullying Prevention and Intervention Review Panel will deliver their report later on this afternoon to the Board of Education. Joining us to talk about this is Dr. Jean Clinton, a panel member, a clinical professor in the Division of Child Psychiatry at McMaster University, and a staff member with McMaster Children's Hospital. Doctor, thank you so much for the time. It's a pleasure to have you back on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Kate, Bill.
Let's talk a little bit about what you found out. This is quite an exercise that you and of course, Brenda and Dr. Gary Warner put through. And I know you talked to an awful lot of people, but more importantly, you listened to an awful lot of people. What was the experience like?
Well, you know, it's been a very intense experience. It's been a humbling experience, but also a hugely motivating one. People told us about their hurt, their worry. We talked to researchers, we got surveys from kids, and it really has compelled us to do the best job we could and to make sure that we are hanging in and keeping the nose to the grindstone in terms of the board to make sure that these recommendations are acted upon. So we are voluntarily going to come back and check in. But it's been humbling, and the people of Hamilton have just been tremendous and open and generous-hearted. They want to see change, and they feel for Sherry Ann and her family for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Jean, as you know, over the years we've done a number of panel discussions on our program about this. You've been involved in some of them, in fact. And the things we heard anecdotally from a lot of the families and some of the victims oftentimes was a frustration that, you know, first of all, we're afraid, and that is quite understandable. The other emotion that we heard an awful lot about was even if we do report this, even if we do follow the protocol that we're supposed to follow, a lot of them felt very unsatisfied that the proper measures were being taken. And that's been over a course of a number of years, of course, that we've been talking to people that have been victimized by this. Did you hear those sorts of things when you were talking to some of the people who came forward?
Absolutely, Bill. That's, you really have, it's been at the heart of the matter is the inconsistency that the voice of students and parents, as examples, have not really been, people haven't felt that they've been heard. And it's why our recommendations, we really look at it from what's the supporting student voice. What do the parents have to be involved? How can we support them? What does the school need to do? What does the system, the board need to do? So we've really looked at the intersectionality to say, at any point in time, we want consistency and people to know what it is that has to be done when there is a report of a bullying event or when there is something that's seen. The inconsistency is just so very devastating.
Well,
and we looked at from a systems perspective.
Mm-hmm. And as we also heard, of course, oftentimes there were repercussions for those who came forward. I mean, they actually felt more in danger after the fact because of the possibility of retaliation.
Yeah, retaliation, you know, the snitches get stitches. We heard all of this and, in fact, heard about a culture of fear that exists in some areas within the board. And so in order to, you know, we looked very deeply at this, at the root causes. And that's, you know, we saw from the evidence that bullying is a relational issue and it's also a group issue. And so in order to prevent it from happening, everyone in the group, the culture, needs to change significantly so that the bullying is stopped, that when people are observed to be in a bullying position, that they are reached out to get support, to make change. And just as you've said, that victims don't feel further victimized. So we've got very detailed recommendations. Under each of our recommendations about what to do, particularly using fabulous Canadian resources like our PrevNet resources, programs like Roots of Empathy. So we looked in great detail exactly at that.
Let me ask you, Jean, about work going forward on this. I mean, you know, this has been an ongoing discussion, of course, for many, many years. And you know, some of the victims that we've talked to would say, you know, if back in those days, if you came forward, they'd just say, don't be such a wimp, you know, come on. Or, hey, they were just kidding. What's your problem? I'd like to think we know more about this now and we're much more empathetic about situations like that. But as you saw what was happening and what you'd like to see happen here, is there a foundation to build on here? I mean, there have been some changes, hopefully some improvements. I know that, you know, oftentimes reconciliation is a part of that process to sit the parties down, the aggrieved party and the offenders, and see if you can find something. And I know when I've talked to some people on the board in the past, they've said they've had some success with that. But are there building blocks here that we can use to try to move forward as a community?
Yeah, there are. So, and a couple of points I want to make around this bill. What the evidence shows, and we relied heavily on research and practical evidence. So what the evidence shows is that if you really want to address the issue of bullying in schools, you need to be thinking at a multiple layered level. So you need to be creating the conditions for, you know, the 75 to 80% of the kids who are at low risk of bullying. So where you've got a culture of caring, and then you've got interventions, and you think about the 15% or so who are at risk of it, and then different ones for the 5% of kids. So you really need to be thinking throughout the system about how do I make the changes that need to happen in front of me and at the system kind of level. Now, what we know at the community level is schools can't be doing it on their own. You know, as you implied there, there's great resources out there, restorative justice, restorative practices. There's good evidence for that. There's good evidence for involving community in schools, even around the unsupervised issue around recess time. So we've got evidence from programs. There's a program in Finland called Kiva, which we learned lots about and want to bring some of that thinking into the school. But it takes a multi-tiered, a whole school approach, with everybody having ownership, you know, from the director of education, board of trustees, right down to the classroom teacher, the custodians, the bus drivers, everyone needs to see this as something that they have the power to make change around.
And how do you incorporate that into the student body? Because certainly they have to play a part in this as well. I know that, as you mentioned, Jane, there's a breakdown of people who may be more vulnerable to this. But how do you get them to buy into the, well, basically the see something, say something attitude, which does not, by the way, I know you want to clarify that, does not mean confront the bully necessarily. It just means make sure that that person that's being victimized by this knows that there's going to be some support from within. And we've seen examples of that. You know, pink shirt days and things like that are wonderful ideas. But you need to get into their heads to make sure that that's the way things are going to be right now. That seems to be problematic.
Yeah, well, do you know what? A big part of it, Bill, and you're implying it, is that it's not enough just to have a, you know, see it, say it, have pink shirt days. But when I speak as a student, I need to be in a culture that values my voice. Not only that, but in a culture that when I do speak, somebody freaking does something about it.
Yep.
You know, so it's up to the adults in the system to listen intently, to give voice and agency to students and parents, but, you know, students particularly, and get their input. How is it going? You know, the number of times I hear that, we had no idea that the students had all those thoughts about things. So, you know, voice and agency is just so very, very important here. And that means you need a receptacle, a receptor, the adults around the students who are willing to say, I'm going to look at this, I'm going to listen, I'm going to change my mode of understanding here and be an ally.
Jean, how important is the home environment here? I mean, we've talked about the student environment, certainly, but that's you know, 8:30 to 3:30, et cetera. But oftentimes we've, you know, statistics and reports have indicated that bullies are sometimes simply emulating what they see in their home environment, and tragically, and they simply, you know, they carry on in other environments. They become the bully. Can we do that? Can we extend this outreach into the family unit itself, into the families, and say, look, we all have to be part of this? They have to buy into this as well.
Yeah, you know, Bill, I think it's absolutely essential that we do reach out to parents, that parents, parents as partners, parents as understanding some of the root causes. I think we need to think of parents in a very, very different way than we have done. Will we shift the attitudes of every parent who is a bully to not talk to their kids that way or treat their kids that way? Because very often kids who are bullies themselves are kids who have experienced trauma. So we do have to reach out. We do have to reach out to parents. But you know, I've been a child psychiatrist for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And I know the healing power of school, you know, and I'm sure you do. You've heard stories on your program so often about how a kid can come from a background an environment where the best is not brought out in them. But they come to school, there's a teacher, there's a culture of caring, and they are able to change that worldview, that they're able to see the other in a different way than what they're getting programmed. So we need to be acting on all of these different levels in order to make systematic change.
I, as we mentioned, you're going to present this to the board later on today, virtually, obviously, mm-hmm. because of what's going on these days. And I know we've talked about this in the past, Jean, you're a strong advocate for an action plan to say, okay, how are we going to address this? And there needs to be a roadmap for that. But what about accountability along that road? Are there going to be points here that we can stop and hit the pause button and say, how are we doing on this? These things tend to peter out after a period of time, and the next tragedy is actually the impetus for us to get back on track. How do we stay on message here?
Yeah, it's such an important point as well, Bill. You know, you're pretty good at this job, eh?
Yeah, I've been doing this for a while too, Jean. You know that.
Yeah. So, you know, the issue of accountability is so at the heart of, one, what we heard about, You know, how can parents want to know, you know, if something has happened and something doesn't get done about it, is there a way that we can make that change? And so what we are recommending is that there be a staff lead who is responsible at the board level for all of the safe schools, as well as making sure that there's a commitment statement to looking at bullying, that there will be data collected that is asking the students, is there, what experience have you had around bullying in the past 6 months, not once every 2 years? And we're also asking the board to be accountable to, we've got immediate action steps, excuse me, we've got immediate action steps that we're recommending that they follow, but we're also saying you need to collect data that is disaggregated so you know what is happening and what to do about it. You need to be asking the question, is what we're doing making any difference at all? And so that area of accountability from both the individual action to the board level is incorporated in our report for sure.
Well, you know, in the past we've talked with Manny Figueredo, the Director of Education for the board, and I sense the empathy that Manny has felt about this too, of course, as somebody who was in the classroom for so many years and now as the Director of Education. And I was heartened, I got to tell you, on a personal note, Gene, when I found out that you and Brenda and Gary were going to be involved in this, because you have stellar reputations and an incredible commitment to this whole thing, too. So I look forward to reading the report and talking about this and further. This is not the end. This is just the end of the beginning, isn't it, if I can quote Churchill?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the end of the beginning. And, you know, the other point I wanted to just add, Bill, is we were very, very careful to figure out what is the board already committed to in terms of their pillars and the well-being and equity, their equity action plan, their Indigenous education plan, their mental health strategy, their equity action plan. We have recommended, and Manny has been, a leader in the development of these things. We want to make sure that things are integrated within that. It's not another, oh, here comes another thing we have to do, but it is embedded within. So that as well has a livability component to it. But just don't let it get buried within all of that, or you'll be hearing from us.
Absolutely. Well, let's keep the lines of communication open, Gene. Thank you so much for the great work that that you and the panel have done, and thanks for the time today. I always appreciate our conversations.
Likewise, Bill, very much so. Thank you very much.
Take care. Dr. Gene Clinton, of course, one of the panel members for the Safe Schools Bullying Prevention and Intervention Review Panel.
The Bill Kelly Show, weekdays from 9 to noon on 900 CHML.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.